Hey, thanks for joining us again, as you do every week, here at the Tradescast, a podcast dedicated to all things business entertainment. I'm Jeff Favre.
And I'm Michael Patterson, and welcome to the Tradescast for August 15th, 2010.
Hey, Mike, let's get right to the box office, because, you know, we talked about this last week. There were three movies opening up, and we both kind of predicted that one of them would be the outright winner, and you know, we were wrong. Although I had a feeling the Expendables would do well, but I never anticipated that it would be number one.
Well, I'm guessing that we both overestimated the power of Julia Roberts able to open up a movie. It seemed like a pretty much a perfect storm, too, with her and very well-loved material. But, you know, the Expendables really, really, I think, outperformed. I think Lionsgate must be thrilled.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to think Jean-Claude Van Damme is finally taking his karate lessons to kick himself in the butt, because he should have put himself in this movie. He turned it down. $35 million for a Lionsgate film. I mean, they've got to be thrilled. I don't know how well it's going to do in subsequent weeks. On the other hand, Eat, Pray, Love at $23 million, you know, I think you just said it right, which is, I don't know if there's any women right now who can, you know, quote, open a movie. Because Eat, Pray, Love has been one of the biggest books of the last several years. And while this is a respectable number, a lot of people, me included, thought this movie would do anywhere from 10 to 20 million more.
Yeah, you know, I think that would have, I think that's what they were desiring. I think that they probably knew that there was a potential for it to make this little. I just don't see how you release these movies in August and expect them to do gangbusters. Expendables, I think, you know, it's still part of like a summer blockbuster thing, but Eat, Pray, Love, I just don't see that. I know I hammer in the idea of the August dump, and we'll probably get a lot more to that in a couple of minutes, but I'm telling you, I just, they must have known something, and they must have, you know, had some kind of worry about this. You know, Sony has, in the last 2 weeks, put two movies out in August. And, you know, one of them did, I think, above expectations, and I think this did well below expectations.
Yeah, the one that did above expectations is The Other Guys, which is still holding on to third place. This one probably did less. You know, it didn't help the reviews were just not very good for Eat, Pray, Love. So maybe you're right. Maybe they felt like they had a product that was good, but not great. Whereas the Expendables, I mean, how could you go wrong? You had a film where it was explosions and Sylvester Stallone and a lot of probably steroids. And, you know, you couldn't go wrong with this film. And I think they knew how to market it. And speaking of marketing, I really think that kind of problems marketing may be the reason that Scott Pilgrim versus the World did only about $10 million, because they could attract those nerds at Comic-Con, but I just don't think they found a way to get the mainstream audience there.
Well, you know, I think there's a bit of a curse going on with Mr. Senna, with having done so well with Juno and, you know, wanting to find that next kitschy, kind of nerdy, kind of witty, kind of all that kind of stuff all rolled into one to make gangbusters. And I don't think it's something that you can try to reformulate. You know, I've from everything I've heard, this got good reviews and is a pretty funny movie and everything. The director, I think for most people, if they've actually seen Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and maybe have seen the TV show Spaced, that you know, they know this director, they know he does good work, and you know, I believe he also did some writing on this as well. So obviously there was some sort of built-in audience, and those people went. It did make, you know, just over $10 million. It's just that it's not breaking into the zeitgeist of the general population. I think that's in a way sad, but you know, I don't know how you can expect it if you're going to be poor at marketing as well.
Yeah, you know, but it does show you how hard it is. That's why a lot of people were uncertain about Inception, which finished number four this week. It keeps dropping really respectable numbers, you know, 25-35% instead of 50% every week. And Inception, you're basically dealing with complete unknown. Here's a story nobody knew, and they really had to sell it to people. And it shows you that if you hit on the right idea and you do it well, that people will keep going to the film, that you will get good word of mouth. And that's a perfect example. We're going to have to see if any of these movies can hold up. I don't know if any of them will. Speaking of which, the movie that fell off the top 10 this week, I just thought I'd give a little nod to Toy Story 3, Mike. It became the number one box office animated movie of all time this weekend.
That is quite impressive. And it knocked off who?
Shrek 2. It beat Shrek 2. And it's actually the number two Disney movie of all time behind one of the Pirates of the Caribbean. So it's really amazing. But I'll tell you, it was a top movie. I'm feeling very smart picking that as the movie of the summer. But I think you should feel very smart to say that Inception. I remember when you said Inception and you said it could do $200 million. And I thought, you're nuts. But you were right, and it's done incredibly well. Now, that aside, you have been for weeks talking about August dump week and dump month, and we haven't really had one, but oh, Lord, do we seem to have one coming up, because there are five what we would call legitimate wide-release films coming out, and I don't know if we got one movie between all of them.
I know. It's funny, because you can make justifications for nearly all of them, I think, except one. But I don't think that any of them are going to perform. I think that, for the most part, these studios are either trying to push this out with hoping that they'll get some excitement going on. But, you know, I still look at it, and I'm still unsure of what is going to be the movie that pokes out. I don't know if any of them will, to be honest with you, but...
Let's break them down one at a time, okay? Because I'll make a prediction when we're all done. But let's look at, because each of these movies doesn't have direct competition right now. They're all a different kind of film than what's out. And let's take The Switch first, because The Switch has the most recognizable stars of all of them in Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman, two legitimately big TV stars who have been great co-stars in movies but have never made a movie really sell opening weekend. And this looks kind of funny. I don't know what you think about the poster with Jason Bateman kind of looking like he's smelling a semen sample, but but I think this movie has potential.
I keep on thinking to Jason Bateman's movie of about a month ago, the Matt Judge movie.
Last year, Extract?
Yeah, exactly. And I see it as almost, since nobody went to that and I was excited about that movie, I actually went to see it, and I'm excited about this, and I probably will go wind up seeing this. I'm assuming that nobody's going to see this movie either. So, it's one of those things where I think people always want to see Jason Bateman and Jennifer Aniston do well in movies. They always cast them in these things, but they always wind up picking these movies that are a little off kilter. They never are. They're never, slapsticky enough to really get the comedy thing going, and they're not, let's just say, dramatic enough to be true dramas either.
Well, here's the thing. It's the curse of Juno and Little Miss Sunshine. Little Miss Sunshine, a massive hit. Juno, a surprise hit. Everyone is trying to remake that kind of success. A smaller film, kind of weird, kind of quirky. You know, this doesn't fall into that hangover kind of adult comedy. This is this other kind of adult comedy. And maybe they've got it here. Maybe they don't. They're definitely trying to throw out the Juno name, you know, like, hey, if you like Juno, but you might be right. It might be a little too offbeat. And Jennifer Aniston just hasn't proved it yet to be a major star. Now,
there is one other thing I should mention about this that is different than definitely Juno is these are older people. I mean, we're going to eventually have to tackle this topic of, age in Hollywood. But we're not looking at young couples here that a lot of broader people are going to relate to that go to movies. These people are supposed to be in their late 30s, early 40s and doing this.
No, you're right.
I think there's a lot of people that would be in the Juno audience that might be late teens, early 20s, that look at this and go, Who cares? You know, right. Jason Bateman and Jennifer Aniston, them are people from a decade when they were in diapers, you know?
Right. It is more of a Little Miss Sunshine, where most of the Little Miss Sunshine crew was in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Right. That was an eclectic family group of characters. And it's really more like that in the sense of who it might attract. But you can tell from this poster in particular, if you guys have seen it, it's out there all the time. In fact, Jason Bateman said in an interview recently that he and his daughter pass it when he's taking her to school, and she thinks that he's eating yogurt, and he has to explain, "Oh no, it's not yogurt, honey." but I think that they are trying to tap into that we're a little older, but we're still hip group. And there isn't another movie out right now like that movie, so it has potential. But you're right; it may not have as much potential as the sequel that's out this coming week, which is Nanny McPhee Returns, which definitely has some pedigree to it, but I still think these Nanny McPhee movies look weird.
I know. And, the obvious comparison is to Bedknobs and Broomsticks. It's got that British vibe going for it. But when you look at, like, a cast of, Emma Thompson, Maggie Gyllenhaal, and Ralph Fiennes, you're going, oh, wow, that's, those are heavy hitters. It's a kids movie. I don't know, at least in the U.S., whether we're going to be watching these and going like, oh, yeah, this is what our kids want to watch. Maybe not. I just don't know. It seems very wholesome, but I don't know the Nanny McPhee franchise all that well. I assume that this could do great. I'm assuming it also could do really bad. So
yeah, we're just going to have to see. Nanny McPhee is a strange one. It Universal's behind it. It may do well. People do like this character, kids in particular, but I still find it is very English. So we'll have to see. Now, something that's truly American, and I believe is a guaranteed, I will give it the Jeff Bob guarantee of $15 million next week, is Piranha 3D. And that is because, one, it is considered to be one of the most violent movies that's ever going to be released. Apparently, they used a whole tanker truck full of blood. That's how much blood is in it. And two, there are no other horror movies out right now. So watching, fish in 3D eat scantily clad women is a thing that a very, I'm afraid, too large group of Americans is really into.
Well, I'm going to have to ask if the legal department of whoever owns the rights to Jaws is all over this poster, because all it reminds me of is Jaws. But, the truth is that this is probably the biggest wild card out there. First of all, it's a 3D movie. Secondly, you mentioned it was horror. And thirdly is that, the ticket prices are more. So if people actually do go to this, it should be interesting to see, in droves how much, it could be anything. And also another wild card is that this is being distributed by Dimension, which doesn't have the deepest pockets in the world. It's the part of the Weinstein Company. So they're going to hope to cash in, but they're not going to be able to push it into 35,000 screens. It's going to be less than that. And it's not going to be an Avatar type release where it's basically everywhere in both 3D and 2D. It's going to be in as much as they can afford. And so, who knows what that is, and who knows, this is also an interesting thing for a theater owner. When they look at this slate of their choices right now, do they go, well, at least I could charge more money, or, who cares? Maybe I'll, keep Inception in another week. I'm really curious to see how wide that this film does and whether it can really garnish true money at the box office.
Well, all I'm telling you is that Elizabeth Shue's in it. She looks funny. Jerry O'Connell's in it. And Richard Dreyfuss actually plays a character that's kind of like his character in Jaws. So I think that they've got that this movie is supposed to be both gross out and funny. And I think it's going to surprise you, because I know that weird group of people who have this kind of fetish are going to be there. They're just into this kind of movie where it's funny and gruesome. Speaking of not funny and not gruesome, Vampires Suck is the latest of these movies. I don't even know if we should even speak of Vampire Suck, but the fact that these movies continue to get made, these low-budget parody movies that look like a sketch from Saturday Night Live, which was already too long in Saturday Night Live, and it's now 90 minutes long. They keep making these movies because they keep making money.
They do make money, and obviously you can talk to the people at Dimension about that because they were the ones that did the Scary Movies thing, which kind of pushed this whole much more recent parody type thing out there. You know, I assume they're putting this out there so that we are aware of it come next month when it's on cable, because I don't see how this can make money. They're even releasing this on Wednesday, which is a little weird. I don't understand that.
Yeah, that blew me away too, because normally you only do that if you think a movie's going to be a huge hit, and all I can think is maybe they thought if they didn't have those first 2 days that maybe nobody would ever go see it. I don't know, but I'm hoping we never have to talk about Vampire Suck again. I hope it doesn't even crack the top 10. Now, a film that I know is going to crack the top 10, I just don't know how high it's going to be, because it could be anywhere from number 10 on the list to number 1. I really believe that is Lottery Ticket. And that's because there hasn't been a film with a large number of African-American stars in a story that's very culturally African-American out in a while. This film has no competition in that genre. And even though it doesn't look necessarily interesting to me, it wasn't meant for me. I think this movie could be really big the first week.
You know, I think that that's its only chance. It doesn't have Tyler Perry in the title. And, you know, that puts it down at least a notch. You know, it's hard to figure out where this could go. You know, the director doesn't have a big collection of work. I think it's mostly music videos. So that, you know, you sit there and you look at the formula. The only thing that I think that has a chance is that, you know, Warner Brothers is the studio behind it. So you're assuming they're going to give it the release that it needs. I mean, Warner's has been on a roll with the exception of that the kid movie. So it's going to get its release. It's just how much can you expect? And I could see this at the top and I could see this at the bottom of next week at the box office.
Give me a prediction. Who is going to win next week?
The Expendables. That's I think that all these movies are going to be really low on the list. I think that if any of these movies break, you know, initially I was going to say 10 million, but I'll step it up to 12. If any of these push over the $12 million marker, I would consider them a success. And I am really curious if any of these do it. I could see a reason and a justification for every one of these except for Vampire Sucks as hey, it of course it did well. You know, it has blah, 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 blah. But I can also see all of them doing, you know, $11.5 million and everybody going, it's August. You know, and
you could be right. And I have a hard time picking this. I want to pick the Switch as the winner next week, but you might have talked me out of it. I feel like Piranha is going to surprise you, but you know, maybe it's just Lottery Ticket because it has no competition. So I'm going to go with Lottery Ticket. I've changed my tune.
All I can say though is that we don't know whether, you know, it is going towards a black audience. We all know that. We don't know whether the black audience is even interested though in going to see Bow Wow and a bunch of other people that, you know, aren't necessarily in, you know, that upper genre of acting or anything of that nature. I mean, I don't know if they would really care about this movie. See, that's the other thing is that you can't just say like, well, it's a black movie.
You can't.
Black
people are gonna you're absolutely it. Right. You can say that about Tyler
we
Perry.
Know
you
that.
Can say that about a Tyler Perry movie.
Right. But you can't say that about any black movie. You know, we've all seen Pootie Tang, and that, you know, that made like $12 at the box office. Nobody went to that. And that was Chris Rock when he was really doing well.
Yeah, you're right. The only thing I can say for certain, Piranha 3D will get its audience. I guarantee it. So we're just going to have to see. Well, I'm excited about next
week. You know Richard Dreyfuss is in that
movie? Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss is in it, parodying himself. It's like Vampire Sucks in 3D with fish. I don't know. But we will check in on it. But let's look at TV for a minute, Mike. You know, we haven't been going over the ratings too much because we're waiting for the fall season to get going and the summer season's kind of over. And we've been looking at some of the premium channels. But something interesting has been happening in late night, and I predicted this, and a lot of people said I was going to be wrong, but ever since Leno got back, every week he has beaten David Letterman, and not only has he beaten him, but it went from being very close at the beginning to back to where it was before all the debacle. He's up to a 41% lead over Letterman. He's comfortably ahead, and it looks like that's a trend that's going to just keep going.
Boy, I got to tell you, you really did call this because I wasn't sure what was going on. And I think a lot of people really took the conventional wisdom that Letterman had staked his ground during this time where the NBC experiment was going on and that was it, you know? And I think we were all taken by surprise that, you know, the audience for Leno has snapped back. And I tell you, if I was anybody that works under the, you know, David Letterman Worldwide Pants organization, I'd be so darn frustrated right now. It's as if, you know, everything you do just doesn't work.
Well, I've said this before, and this is something that you can take to the bank. There are 4 million people, I don't know where they are because I ain't one of them, but there are 4 million people who are going to watch Jay Leno no matter what time he's on, as long as it's not past their bedtime. But whether he's in early, late night, or prime time, he's going to get 4 to 5 million viewers. Now, that's terrible for prime time, but that is fantastic for late night. Whereas Letterman, I used to be a big Letterman fan. Now he just looks so bored to me. Plus, he looks old. He looks like he's really getting old and bored and even more bitter, like where it's not even funny anymore how bitter he is. And I just feel like his audience is going to fade. Once again, he had that one little opportunity when Leno was gone, but I think he's just fading again. And I just don't ever see this trend changing on these two.
I think that the trend is pretty much set. Anybody who thinks any different, I think, is crazy. How long do you think Leno's going to be at it? You know, now that he's pretty much been able to step right back into his slot, have no problems whatsoever, kind of repicking up his audience, we'll see what happens in the fall. Maybe that there's, you know, there'll be some interesting lead-in issues and Letterman will get a little bit more of a bounce back. We don't know. It is still summer. But, you know, if he all of a sudden says, you know, hey, I could do this until I'm 75, NBC's going to let him now.
Yeah, you know, they can't. They cannot stop him now. That is the funniest thing about backing down is that they can never tell him to retire. And what will happen eventually is his ratings will not plummet, but when he gets in his later 60s, if he decides to keep going, eventually they'll start to drop. And at what point do you say, oh my God, okay, we can't do this anymore. They'll be afraid to do it. Meanwhile, and this is fascinating because of Leno, I believe, Jimmy Fallon, who I think is pretty funny, is soundly trouncing Craig Ferguson, who I find actually more unwatchable than a test pattern. I think he's terrible. But Jimmy Fallon, wouldn't it be funny if Conan goes off to basic cable, which we've learned is great for primetime, but we don't know yet if it can ever be a viable market for late night. But what if he kind of disappears and Jimmy Fallon eventually takes over The Tonight Show?
I just can't see it happening. I understand your opinion on enjoying Jimmy Fallon. I think he's awful. I truly do. I think it's like comedy suppositories. It's like, okay, I'm going to prepare this joke and now you've got it and I'm going to let it go and just, you know, let that sit in you. I can't, I hate his delivery and his aesthetic. It drives me nuts. Of course, so does Leno. So what do I know? But I just feel that the 12:30 thing. I mean, I think you can put test patterns and people will watch it.
I would rather watch a test pattern than Craig Ferguson. That much I'm absolutely certain of. And we will agree to disagree on Jimmy Fallon. But it'll be fascinating when this does happen because Jay Leno is in his 60s. So it's going to happen at some point. Now, whether it's going to be Jimmy Fallon or NBC gets Kimmel, or maybe they try something different like Tina Fey, which might be kind of interesting. She'd be in her mid-40s, kind of an interesting choice. We'll have to see, but it's going to be fascinating. The late night wars will exist at some point, but right now it's kind of a trouncing with Leno. But this made me think about an email that we got this week, Mike. I got an email from Annie in Madison. She emailed us. You can always email us at thetradescast@gmail.com, or you can check us out at twitter.com/thetradescast, or some people like to call us. We love getting voicemails at 323-638-4763, or check us out at the Tradescast on Facebook. Mike puts up some great updates on our Facebook page. But Annie and Madison emailed us at thetradescast@gmail.com because last week we were talking about Oprah Winfrey's new network, OWN, the OWN network, and how Discovery, the Discovery Channel, is a part ownership. And Annie asked me how much money that Oprah put up versus Discovery. And it turns out, actually, Discovery is the one putting up all the money. They put up already $100 million, or close to it, and they just announced this week they're going to put another $90 million into this network, which so far we don't know if anybody is going to watch it, although we talked about it last week. They got Rosie O'Donnell. So we're just going to have to see what happens. Eventually, after 5 years up there, if Oprah wants, she can buy the whole network back. But, man, I'd love someone to give me $190 million to try a cable channel. That'd be fascinating. Now, Mike, another cable channel that is going to get started in October that it certainly does not have the backing of the OWN network is FearNet.
Yeah. And, I'm starting to warm up on this. We had a little bit of discussion on this before the podcast. And originally, I keep on thinking that there are two models, and I don't know enough about what they're planning on launching. One would be just a legitimate thing like the Sci-Fi Network, but for horror. It's pretty much the one genre that doesn't have its own channel that's large enough, I think, to support itself and not be, a complete waste of time and money. But the other one is this idea of this mix and match of movies they can get on the cheap to broadcast, but also a lot of like internet videos. There's a lot of shorts and really ultra low budget stuff that is put on these websites, and I don't, if they go by that model, I don't think they're able to do it because it becomes a mess. There's been comedy, both stations and shows where they've tried to make this happen, and it's fallen flat. I know that on Comedy Central now, I believe Tosh.0 or whatever has now started beating The Daily Show in ratings, but I think that might be just a flash in the pan right now. But I just don't see them being able to really carve this niche out without really putting in the time and really putting in the effort. You got to remember that the Sci-Fi Channel has been around for well over a decade. It'll be two decades coming up pretty soon. And it took them a long time before they basically said, hey, we're going to start doing our own original programming that isn't, sucky. So,
FearNet has been a fairly successful website, but I agree with you. Just because you're a successful website doesn't mean that you can make it as a cable channel. Now, they're being backed. They're owned by Sony Pictures, Lionsgate, and Comcast. So these are major players. And they've announced a new head, and that's Peter Block, who was behind the Saw movie franchise. So they seem to have the right people involved. But yes, there is another channel that has tried this. It's owned by NBC Universal. It's called the Chiller Channel, and I guarantee you that you don't have it unless you have every channel, because it is not a very successful channel. But if FearNet markets itself as really kind of a hardcore horror, there might be a space for this, because honestly, you and I were talking before the podcast. I was trying to think of a network that could be made, a cable channel that doesn't exist already. The only one I could come up with is the Mr. Skin channel, where they replay movies with naked ladies who became famous when they were still unknowns. That's about the only untapped market I can see. So I don't know if this can make it or not, but I do think it's worth the effort. And like you said, if you have the money and the patience, eventually you might be able to put up original programming. And if you can afford to do that, then you might become viable.
Yeah. And my fear is that they're thinking original programming off the top and on the cheap by getting it from the public. And that always drives me nuts. But we're going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be worse than Vampires Suck. So.
Oh, I don't know. It could be worse.
We're going to check out FearNet when it starts in October. We'll start getting some reviews of it, see if anybody's watching it. Of course, we're going to be watching out for the Oprah Winfrey Network when it finally gets up and going in more than a year from now. We'll keep checking out the ratings both in primetime and late night with the Late Night Wars. And we'll be looking at all these new five movies that come out, as well as giving you predictions for the Emmys, which are going to be in a couple of weeks. Until then, I'm Jeff Pham from Mike Patterson. Have a great day.